And during that period of time, I could tell he was talking in terms of what he envisioned as a united Arab country.
Right.
And I'm saying to myself, oh, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
When you fight, when you fight with yourself, I mean, people in your own country, and then they fight in their own country.
Yeah.
You take Lebanon, for example, they went for, what, 12, 13 years shooting it up?
Oh, yeah. Destroying. No. The Civil War was actually, for the most part, of 20 years, but like 13 or 14 years. You wouldn't want to go there.
And you know, you could just say, hello, my name is Victor Ortino. Hello, I'm an Episcopal. Oh, by the way, I'm an American.
Yeah.
And so that's what's dominating.
Yeah.
And that's why all of this business is going on.
Did you ever see a Lebanese ID card or a passport? Because the religion is at the top. Not that you're Lebanese, but the religion is at the top.
Yeah. Okay.
And then it goes from there down. It's just, it's fascinating.
No, I haven't seen that. I do have, well, no, I don't think you have it yet. But I was going through my stuff, and I have the mail that was sent to my father,
mm-hmm.
I think maybe mm-hmm. to my mother. But they were censored, and this now is in the 40-41.
Mm-hmm.
And they're censored from Syria or Lebanon.
Yeah.
By whom and for what reason, I don't know.
Yeah, well, because at that point, World War II was there. Because there was French control, German influence, British. And so they just extended the war everywhere. It's just amazing.
Then you need to look at Saudi.
Oh, yeah.
And where there is no disturbance that I have seen.
Mm-hmm.
They have a king.
Mm-hmm.
America doesn't have kings. I think Obama should jump on that. The other part of it is that for some reason our State Department thinks that every country in the world needs to look like the United States.
Yeah.
And that skews our approach to it.
Right.
Of recent times, I kept saying to myself, why the fool around with Syria? Why are we choosing sides when in Syria? Why, when we invaded Iraq, it was very obvious reasons to go there. Mm-hmm. And they weren't hidden behind the internal security. Well, mm-hmm. a lot was, mm-hmm. but a lot wasn't. And so, okay, you know why you went in there.
Yeah.
I've been to Syria. I've been to Iraq. I know that, I say no, I'm sure there's internal security, but it was not evident
mm-hmm.
in Syria, but I'm presuming that. But it was clearly evident in Iraq.
Yeah.
That was between after Iran and before Kuwait.
Right.
So I was there at that period of time.
Right.
Well, I don't know.
Good. Well, I have my first 2 days done.
Pick anything you want.
What I thought I'd do today is start out looking at some of the personalities that you worked with over time, and then get into some of the specific things during your governorship. And so I want to start out the personalities, looking at the other elected officials when you were governor. So people like Dave Frohnmayer, you know, all those kinds of people. And last night, as I'm going through your oral history, I'm up to, let's see, tape number 8 of 64. I've read about 200 pages.
Yeah.
But there was a really interesting back and forth with you and the interviewer Clark Hansen about Bob Thornton as Attorney General, who seemed to make all sorts of opinions that were then overruled. And then you later became good friends with him. But it struck me that one of the things that's really fun and I can imagine very interesting in being governor is you've got other people who, in effect, have equal political power because they've all been elected by the total electorate of Oregon. Mm-hmm. And so dealing with them from personality issues to constitutional issues to...
Oh, that must be my wife.
But, dealing with that, you know, how did that work? So tell me about some of them.
Now, with the understanding that my relationship throughout 20 years was I was the minority member.
Right. Yeah.
And so in dealing with them, that was not a kind of a barrier for me. I didn't give a damn. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting to begin with, meaning 1959, Carl Fisher, Eugene, Monty Montgomery, Eugene, Doug Hyder, Salem, I know, I'll get with it. Anyway, there were five of us. Somebody came up with the Young Turks,
mm-hmm.
and we made fun out of it.
Mm-hmm. And I saw that in your oral history, you were saying that you invited Mark Hatfield to kind of be a Young Turk with you.
We brought him aboard. Yes. And we were so naive and young, and we were overwhelmingly Democrats. So we get up and make a motion, and we surprise the Democrats, mm-hmm. and then they'd vote the way they shouldn't be voting, and then they have a recess and bury us.
Right.
So, and actually, we didn't take that as brutal. We just said, well, we had fun doing that. Now,
yep.
we got to figure out what the next stop is, because we didn't know what to do once you won the motion. What now? What do I want to do?
Right.
Gradually, as it came along, we ran into two. I'm in the House now.
Mm-hmm.
And two, I mean, one who very openly, once the sessions are over, the doors are open, and toward the afternoon and evening, and we kind of sit around, just us, these and ours. And,
mm-hmm.
And he was Eastern Oregon, older guy, relatively. We knew how we felt.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we were talking, and that's not the way he voted.
Mm-hmm.
He voted with the Democrats,
mm-hmm.
because he wanted to be reelected.
Mm-hmm.
We know. This was now in private conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there were those kinds. There were those who felt that the Democrats always have to win, give or take, didn't make a damn bit of difference.
Mm-hmm.
But pretty soon, and I won't talk about Victor to you, I got to a point where, my largest example was Vern Cook. Vern was really left,
mm-hmm.
and the attorney, and we disagreed on almost everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I said to myself, well, I gave him the advantage of saying he really believes what he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
This has nothing to do with party or anything. He really believes it. I really believe in what I do. Okay. I'll take that.
Mm-hmm.
We got along together. Didn't buddy-buddy, but the point is we never fought.
Right.
As time moved along and I was given a little bit more respect, and then I think probably the greatest relationship I had on the D side, I'm talking in terms of the mechanics of it, let's say, was Jason Bowe.
Mm-hmm.
Although there were names like Al Flagel and Harry Boyvin, and these guys were all big shots and had been there a long time. And we got to be friends. And then strange things would happen. I mean, strange to me. Tom Mahoney was a real, let me call him a Chicago Democrat. And one time I had done something, I don't know, and we were lining up to go somewhere, and he kind of mumbled to me, well, I'll get you. Okay. for what? But when as time moved along, he passed away, and I was among the others to carry his casket. And so how this all came about, you know, there's some things I didn't know. I just went with it. I never really, well, I did have a problem once with Jake Bennett. Jake Bennett was, let me call it, very late 60s, early 70s, had been recalled from office in Portland. I can't remember whether it was House, excuse me, city or county, I can't remember, but he was recalled. And I was personally offended to think that he was elected as a legislator. That really bothered me. And he was a cantankerous old bastard. He was. So I agonized through the first session he was there, personally. We didn't argue anything. This is all internal with me. Second session, one day I said, Jake doesn't represent his district, but he represents the Jake Bennett's in Oregon, so I guess they're entitled to vote. And then I personally relaxed. And he went through a series of, one time we had a bill on this, I think it was on the sales tax, had it on the floor, and then figures may be wrong, but I think at that time I was going to get $18 million, but this biennium is only going to be $15 million. And Jake gets up and wants to know where that other $3 million is going to. Which members of the tax committee got some of that $3 million? And obviously, you know and understand, we're talking about biennium, and it's not going to be for Fulman. And Clarence Barton was then, that's the third session, speaker, Mr. Bennett, sit down. He kept talking. Mr. Bennett, and I could tell knowing Clarence, his nose would get red, and I didn't know how it looks. And bang, he came down with the gavel, busted it. Those kinds of things. You're asking me if I'm on the right track for what you want.
Well, let's go to when you're governor.
Okay.
And you're working, it's working with the other elected officials, and other statewide elected officials. So the superintendent of public instruction, attorney general, you know, that bunch. So tell me about working with them and what it was like, in effect, sharing power. Did the buck stop with you, or did it stop with the Secretary of State because the Secretary of State's elected? I mean, how did that all work during your administration?
And this is just a sense because we never discussed it, but I honestly believe that they, Treasurer, Secretary of State, Attorney General, they figured the governor was number one.
Okay.
And it wasn't a matter of really trying to say they were ticked off about that. They just had gone through the process, and the governor was number one. Dave Frohmeyer was, well, Jim Redden was Attorney General, but Dave Frohmeyer was Attorney General with most of my. And Dave gave me some opinions I really didn't want. But my attitude was, well, he's the Attorney General. I mean, maybe I don't like it, but his job is to give me an opinion. And whether I like it or not is not the point. I asked for opinion. He gave me an opinion. The Secretary of State, we had really not too much communication. I mean, we saw each other every day, but there was, and I think even now there is, the Secretary of State's office is to audit the parts of the, and I was so pissed off about that because that this was the governor's team, and I'm supposed to do that. The Secretary of State may bitch about it, but she has no authority. But then all of a sudden she's got the authority. So that was really tick, but not again personally.
Right.
Got along with Virginia Redden really quite well. With the Secretary of State, Norma Paulus, Clay Myers. Well, that was actually, we were after I won the election. He was still there. Yeah. So, okay, in context, I know these people, and I know what authority they had, and I respected that, admired the Treasury, which was really shaped up by Bob. And I gave them, I'm talking quietly, all the respect I could for what I thought was their role. And of course, we got together at the Border Control, and we didn't, quite often, didn't agree. Where Norma and Clay were more kind of, no trees in the world are better to be cut again. To me, well, let's cut a couple of trees. Again, it was not a contentious thing. My closest working knowledge is with the Speaker and the President of the Senate.
Right, right.
And I would argue strongly, and I don't do that very often, almost yelling at Jason Poe. And then, again, the Speaker, mentally, Jason Poe is numero uno, and the Speaker is below him. But that, those are all things that how I looked at it.
Right.
But the elected officials, education as well. I invited them. I had my meetings every week of my leadership, but I would invite all of these elected officials, and they would sit in. And the way it would work is that I'd get reports from each of them, and if I may step aside for a second. That was one of the best things I did because up to that point in time, I don't think any of them talked to any other agencies.
Yeah, yeah.
And pretty soon these people got to know each other, and as they heard the other's reports, then they began to realize how their affects this one. Classic Department of Veterans Affairs, huge bottom. And we started a housing thing, and we needed some bonds, and we're talking about $1,000 versus $100, you know.
Yeah.
But what the Department of Veterans did affected this little new agency, and they began to realize what they were doing. That's among other things. But again, the statewide officials were
So they came to those meetings as well.
They were in to whatever my government was doing, and I was pleased to have them come, mm-hmm. and they enjoyed coming. There are some things you just wonder about. But to me, I never thought DR, whatever position they had, they were people, and I had a job, and they had a job, and they say I was stubborn, maybe. I don't know what I did to make Jerry Thompson say, yeah, you were stubborn. I don't know how, but I didn't think I was, but I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, what's the leadership elected?
Right.
I had no problem. No problem at all. Rarely, well, we wouldn't have any. Like I told you, Dave Fromar gave me an opinion. But as far as I was concerned, I didn't go any further.
Yeah.
And so, and it's not an opinion I wanted, but I want you, maybe you might want it just as an exercise. I'll get the book. After I was elected governor for a long time as a House member, we always figured you could line item veto Ways and Means.
Right.
And that was it. So I'm thumbing through and I get to the executive department, I'm reading what the thing, and it says, and I'll paraphrase it, but it says that we can line item Ways and Means,
mm-hmm.
and any other bill with an emergency clause.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I said. So I tested it on an innocuous bill. I still today can't figure out. It went to the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
We lost. And it's so clear to me.
Right.
Not to the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
So Bob Oliver, as we talked about it, he was my. I had two assistants. Bob was one of them, having responsibility to keep an eye on part of state mm-hmm. government, mm-hmm. and my legal person. Governor Ray said, "Oh, but Bob, it says right here. No, I don't think you're not going to win. How legalized, you know?"
Right.
Well, what's in there? It says, you can't, words don't mean anything. Fundamentally, maybe as we talk, it's pretty much the way I exercised my career. I was interested in the measures. I wasn't really interested in fighting with anybody. I wasn't always timid about it. I'm just saying, way I feel,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with that.
Mm-hmm.
We have things like there was the Equal Rights Amendment,
mm-hmm.
and this all came from my secretary. And she said some woman called and, "What Senator Tate do you want to do?" Well, she said he's thinking about it, which I was,
mm-hmm.
and she got so upset that I was thinking about it. And of course I voted for it, but I was looking at it differently. Some of these words as we make equal rights are going to impact some of the things mm-hmm. that they now have.
Yeah.
There's one coming up. I've got to call and talk to her. This is going to be a ballot measure.
Yeah, they're just starting to gather signatures.
Do you know anything about that?
Nothing at all. I watched it last year when, most notably, the ACLU said we're not going to support it. And the reason they did is because they felt that case law protected women and that the way the amendment, as it was written last year, would actually make women a special case over sexual orientation, race, and all those other kinds of things. And they said, no, it's got to be equal. And so apparently the new wording is makes it so that it just enshrines things in the Constitution. Because the fear is if it's in case law, then case law can be overturned at some point. But I haven't seen the new wording at all. And
I'm inclined. I they asked me, and that would be where I would be inclined to support. But I read what it's supposed to, and I still said, well, when we pass equal rights, isn't it equal rights a matter of the equal rights?
Mm-hmm.
No, just like the one.
Yeah.
Equal rights really isn't, depending on what the judge says is equal rights.
Right.
And so that's why I asked you. I'm still going to talk to the lady who wants me to do it. And, you know, I don't know. I haven't.
Yeah, I haven't seen the wording to see what they're doing.
Okay, now back to where you want to be.
Exactly.
You want to be.
Well, let's talk about other elected officials. Your career almost exactly overlapped Mark Hatfield's. You both entered, well, he was in the State House before you, but he became governor as you came in. Reading the oral history, it's pretty clear that your first several sessions, you basically kept your nose to the grindstone in the House. And there were some dealings with the governor's office, but nothing, you weren't really paying attention in a big way to what he was doing. You were focusing on what you were doing. But then in the mid-60s, his career takes off to the Senate. Your expertise changes in the legislature. You're moving into the Senate, your Oregon Senate yourself. And then you become governor, and he is now at that point a well-established Washington, D.C. politician. So talk to me about what it was like to work with him at different stages. And then I'm really going to want to hear more about what it was like when you were the single governor and he was one of the two U.S. senators, because that's always a very interesting dynamic there.
Well, of course, start with almost instantly became good friends,
mm-hmm.
as a family. And his age and our age, meaning the Turks, but he took us on. I was talking to Antoinette when we had the opening, mm-hmm. and going back to those days, and we really almost became familial.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't mean that I would. Even as much as I like him, if there's something he wanted I didn't like, I remember fighting about it, I just won't know.
Mm-hmm.
One time I said, yes, I will vote, and then as I studied it further, and before the vote I got in contact, I said, no, I've changed my mind. Now, some of them don't do that. They, on the day of the mm-hmm. vote is when they vote. But, I respected him. If we look at him versus all the other senators and how they were, the other senators, admired and respected DNR,
mm-hmm.
Mark really gets high marks for
mm-hmm.
that. And that doesn't mean he was a patsy for whoever wanted it. I think probably if you want to look at it, and wonder why. He was the vote against balanced budget that defeated the measure.
Yep.
And it never came to anything. He was never spanked for doing his opinion publicly.
Right.
I couldn't, now, I know most people, or millions of Americans, hopefully, would support that. But he did it, he thought about it, that's where he was. And so his integrity and honesty, even on a major issue, carried the day for him.
Mm-hmm.
And, To me, that's more resounding than a lot of smaller things that might sound bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Vietnam, he was entirely correct. Absolutely correct. That's the same way I feel about why they fought him with Syria. Why did they fuss around with Egypt?
Mm-hmm.
America. Iraq, maybe we had some pretty good reasons to go in there. But I felt the way he felt. Vietnam was just... Vietnam and Afghanistan. We went in, the French left. We went in. Why? Why did we go in? Well, we had that... what do they call it, you know? If the Vietnamese, whoever...
The dominoes.
Dominoes?
Yes.
That's all about the poor. We lost so many soldiers for no good reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not in a position to make nobody really cares how I felt about mm-hmm. Vietnam, because the issues back there. But that's the way I felt, and I felt the soldiers were condemned for that, which I thought were really bad. And my brothers were in the military. They were prisoners of war. They were, and I'm using them, but they were respected for coming home and mm-hmm. all the rest of it. Soldiers came home from Vietnam and people turned their back. That was the tragic part of it.
Mm-hmm.
We're still on Hatfield. I'm glad to have known him. I'm proud to say that. I believe he's unmatched and never will be matched.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't take the route that he took. You know, people said, well, why don't you run for the Senate? You mentioned it just as you introduced it. I was one of one.
Right.
I didn't want to be one of 100.
Right.
And I don't have the time to get up to number one. And the same thing with the House was even worse.
Oh, yeah. It takes a long time to get power in the House.
But it wasn't that basic. It really was as simple as I didn't want to live in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to be one of 100.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I could have beat Bob Packwood in a primary. I think mm-hmm. I could have. But I wasn't interested in doing that.
Yeah.
I don't know if I had... You want to delve more into what you...
Well, let's go into Hatfield-specific policies while he was senator and you were governor. The one that you've explored with me a little bit in the past is the Gorge Scenic Area. And the way the Reagan people called you up right at the end, you said, no, keep it. But Hatfield, during the time you were in governor, Hatfield is... in power, in the majority, out of power. He's a close connection with the Reagans. So explore some of those kinds of things, either policy things or him when he's in the majority and out of the majority while you're governor.
The Gorge is a good thing, but it's one of those cases where he felt the same as I did, and mm-hmm. Actually, when I got Spellman to agree, it's a sloppy document. Everything in the world is supposed to happen with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't interested. It was a long list and a lousy piece of paper. And he signed it, and I signed it. But the point was, he signed it. And so now, that Congress is not going to take this as a gospel, but But the issue now is on the table. Their congressional delegation and the governor and Art Dressler, we needed it because it was the Columbia River. And so we agreed. And then, of course, he had to work through the machinery, and he knows, you know, to get a bill on one subject in Congress is just almost impossible. Mm-hmm. And I think it was his standing that mm-hmm. the Congress considered. If we didn't have anybody, I don't think we could do that. We certainly can't do it with our new senator, and maybe not even with Wyden.
Yeah.
It was the same thing. Yeah. And so we were finding out. And it's interesting to me. What's said, there's a slogan. And take credit for the gorge. And sometimes I get a little irritated because if it hadn't been for me who knew that you had to get both sides, mm-hmm. then you go do it. Nobody did that.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a piece of paper, I think you have it somewhere, where I wrote down my request on just a little on a piece of paper mm-hmm. one time, because it was important to me.
Mm-hmm.
But Hatfield had that stature, and you know it's important. And there are, just like in the legislature, there are some who, well, the worst of them was I'll come up with his name. I was going to say O'Doul, but it's in that field. He was in the setup was a bunch of chairs here and a bunch of chairs here. And he was sitting in the back, on that back point right back.
Mm-hmm. As an aside, reading the oral history, it's really funny how you have geographic memories of where people sit.
Well, I do because they impacted me. and it was a month before I even knew he was a member of the legislature. Mm-hmm. And he moved the previous question, which was his zenith.
Mm-hmm.
That was his high point.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, well, I guess I respect they happened to sit somewhere. George Lehman, there was nobody like George Lehman, an attorney from McMinnville or somewhere in that area. He's the only one that I know of changed votes during the debate.
Mm-hmm.
He was a Republican, but he was very articulate, very concise, very understandable. He sat where Jake Bennett was sitting. Mahoney was over here in that corner, and Turi was wherever, I've forgotten. Debs Potts had his lock on his seat mm-hmm. here. I hadn't thought about what you just said. Yeah, you spotted Gracie Peck was over here.
Mm-hmm.
Bert Cook next to her. God, I guess I...
It's like remembering your third grade classroom.
Well, my problem with that was that when I went to school, they always say alphabetical.
Oh.
And I didn't want to sit in front, for God's sake.
Right.
And it was always A, you know.
Right.
And I remember. Maybe that's where it all comes from.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose if you look at the big picture, a person can make a difference, and And that would go either way.
Mm-hmm.
And there, in my opinion, briefly, there are too many there for their own ego or whatever,
mm-hmm.
not for whatever is right for the country or the state. They will go where they think they'll vote on a measure that it'll help them at their next election.
Right.
And I never changed. I'm not holier than thou, and sometimes I almost hesitate, but I went in because I believed that our government could be better than it was. And I said to myself, I'll just go there and I'll be honest and direct, and maybe some will say, hey, Vic can do it, maybe I can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and unfortunately it hasn't worked that way. So I'm there for the reason that I had to do with the government and the people, and that had some interest in it. I again was a minority member, but I got my real licks in committee.
Right.
And there we did some pretty good stuff. And that's where my opportunity came.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that was something I could do. I tell you, and when I first started, they would give us a sheet of stamp or whatever they gave for us to then mail. I had mine that I bought for my paying my bills and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd use those stamps, and when I wrote to constituents, I used these stamps. Who the hell knows which stamp I use?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knows, except that was the way that I thought it should be.
Yeah.
And anyway, I keep losing the track, but whatever you want.
Well, let's go back to senators. So Hatfield, and as I get into things, there may be more things I want to talk about with Hatfield, because he's such a strong figure. But then you were governor also then. Packwood had been in office for about 10 years by the time you're there. So he's also moving up. And they both become very powerful while you're governor, but they really reach their peak in the early 90s. When one is heading up appropriations and one is heading up finance. But Packwood, notably, was the chair of finance when he rewrote the tax code, almost by himself, in 1986, while you were governor. So talk to me about Bob Packwood, his reputation in the state before the scandal. The reputation in the state was that he was a younger Turk than Hatfield, who had been his professor. And so, you know, Packwood had that kind of reputation, but talk about working with him while you were governor.
Our relationship was good. Although I had very few things that I was directly interested in, that I needed,
mm-hmm.
that I had Phil help or Packwood help. However, I would go to Hatfield. Bob Packwood was, yes, powerful, but he wasn't, in my mind, the same class as Mark
mm-hmm.
Hatfield. He was a senator.
Right.
Mark Hatfield was an outstanding senator. And that doesn't mean he's bad. I don't think he achieved the admiration and respect that Mark,
yeah.
by a long shot.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But we got along together real well. I do remember, I probably made the greatest gift he ever had. We were at Dorchester and walking the beach, he and I. Bob, I said, I want you to know that I'm not going to run for senator. That was when he was up.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was more relieved about that than anybody could have been. But the fact is, I told him, and that's how I believed in him. That's what I wanted. Another aspect of the Hatfield Packwood, you're going to be senator, you were governor. States can do more good than the federal government can do. Mm-hmm. States can experiment, and if it didn't work, that's only one of 50. If it doesn't work here, that's one of, that's the whole
mm-hmm.
nation.
Mm-hmm.
Congress, by the time they finally solve a problem, the problem has already been solved.
Mm-hmm.
So I've said that the highest elected position you can be is a governor. That's because you can do something as a governor.
Mm-hmm.
Where you'd have to fight, well, even the Senate would need 51 or whatever you
need. Yeah, you need 60 most of the time. Yeah.
And so I don't recall calling Bob Packwood for help.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't have too many reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Back to the courts bill. That's true. I got worried that Reagan was going to veto it.
Mm-hmm.
And I called Dr. Jim Baker. And I said, Jim, I haven't left the president for anything. And he said, that's right. I want this. I think that's what walked up. Because I do think Reagan was just about to do just that.
Mm-hmm.
And so in this case, I talked to Baker instead of Reagan.
Right.
Right. But, Packwood, I would say that the pair is a better pair than the pair we have now.
Mm-hmm.
Wyden is very powerful now.
Yeah.
And,
but he's powerful in a weakened Senate.
Yeah.
So I don't think he'll even get up to the level Packwood was, but.
Yeah.
But yeah, within the Senate, he's a very powerful person now.
That's another thing I find so interesting and so contradictory. The only claim about Bob Packwood is that he'd fondle or pat on the butter. They didn't say he was not sleeping with him.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, how terrible that was. And our president got a blowjob in the Oval Office, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have the entire Senate Ethics Committee report, 10 volumes.
Oh, my.
It's one of my pride and joys to have that. But it's very clear that the reason he resigned was eventually because he was caught out simply lying to his colleagues. He was lying to his fellow senators.
Oh.
And so it wasn't the act. It wasn't even responses to the act. It's that he eventually was making things up, and they said, we can't trust you. And that was it.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's the worst thing. I would tell you I had my annual, weekly press conference.
Mm-hmm.
I called it the availability. And if the media ever wanted to really get to me, they would hint that I'm lying. And that would, they call me, like, son of a bitch or whatever they want, but not liar.
Yeah.
And they knew that.
Yeah.
I had fun with them. Denny Miles is the one that gave me the formula. You have the one of three ways to answer a question. I know I'm going to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but I'll get the information. I know, but I'm not going to tell you. That drives them nuts. And a couple of times, particularly Roger Nation.
Yeah.
And, well, like what? What are you going to do? I said, we're ready for it. And I smiled finally. I said, I know what you're trying to do. But and so we had a good relationship.
Yeah.
And you've got my, that's probably my prized position.
Yeah.
To think that the media would do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Now, let's go with another Washington, D.C. person, little remembered in Oregon, but Al Ullman,
mm-hmm.
Who in your first couple of years was he's Democrat, but he was the chair of the Ways and Means Committee. So he was arguably one of the top two or three most powerful people in the country. So did you have dealings with him, or was that just something that was far away back in D.C.?
Although we got started faster than any governor.
Mm-hmm.
But I say that to you, I knew government.
Right.
I knew who was there. I knew who were the good people. I helped either pass or sit there when some, you know, what government was like. And so we got going right away. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to stop and ask anybody. Matter of fact, I decided when Tom had finished his 8 years, I said to myself, hell, I can do that job. And
yeah.
So that's what I said to myself.
Yeah.
And so I got to going because we had a lot of things to do in Oregon,
mm-hmm.
and hardly any of them were affecting D.C.
Mm-hmm.
So I really never had any communication with Ullman.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. Denny Smith came in and I said, you're going to win this thing. Now, why I said that, Denny was just nowhere, and here we got this big shot.
Right.
And he did win, but strange stuff goes on.
Oh, yeah. One of my favorite things about that is when Tom Foley was defeated in 94, we were doing exit polling for the entire Pacific Northwest, and 25% of the people in his congressional district thought that George Nethercutt would be the Speaker of the House.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no. Doesn't work like that at all. But yeah, so yeah, Denny Smith was in. My favorite thing about that new district, every single person who has held that office since Denny Smith to now has been divorced while in office.
No.
Every one of them. And Stan Bunn was, or Jim Bunn was only in for one term.
Yeah.
And he still got divorced while he was in office.
I want to tell you this, Jim, that my joy, and we talked about it, but it's becoming reality, that you have had the big picture because you were interested in it. It had nothing to do with Fricatea or anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
That was your field of interest. It's institutional memory, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever I say or anybody else says, and you can put it in context.
Oh, yeah.
I know this happened.
Yeah.
That's the joy of it for me.
Oh, it's the joy of it for me, too.
And I thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Let's shift away from the U.S. senators and members of the House and things like that and come back to Oregon. And clearly the big name is Tom McCall. So talk about your relationship with Tom McCall. You were basically in the Senate the whole time that he was governor. You're in the minority the entire time. And I've read, once again, in the oral history, you were very different, for instance, with the media. You had your weekly media gatherings. He didn't do that kind of thing. He didn't gather the department heads together to talk. He kind of went, you described him as Reagan-esque, kind of going to the public to bounce in kind of thing. So talk to me about your relationship with Tom McCall and what it was like from your vantage point in the Oregon Senate.
Thomas difficult in the sense that he'd be turned on or off. He either hated me or I wouldn't say liked me, but didn't hate me.
Mm-hmm.
I always figured that's Tom.
Mm-hmm.
So he'd do some things that were outrageous, but I'd say that's Tom. That was my way.
Mm-hmm.
I tell a story about, if you really want to know about Tom and golf, I play golf with him, and he hit the ball, and I'd say, nice shot, Tom. And he'd say, yes, it was. No, you and I would say, thank you. He would say, yes, it was. But that was Tom. On the election night that I beat him in the primary,
mm-hmm.
he was very upset.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept waiting for a phone call, no phone call. Talked to Mark Hatfield, and he really didn't have particularly any, you know, what do you do when a guy
mm-hmm.
gets a call? So I just decided to go down to his headquarters. Unfortunately, he was in the lobby talking to the media when I showed up. Now, it wasn't unfortunate for me in the sense that I just didn't want an embarrassing situation.
Mm-hmm.
And he was petulant as hell.
Mm-hmm.
And the media caught him. But then we went upstairs to his room, and he really jumped on everybody up there. His manager, a nice woman, I know her very well, she's in tears. Our state chairman was in tears.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't. I thought that was... That wasn't very nice, but I said, that's Tom.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that. However, we never, I mean, I have a photograph somewhere, maybe you have it now. Yeah, it's a very complimentary thing she writes on there, not just Tom McCall. And yet, I don't know, he actually says that Audrey says, Audrey mm-hmm. told me that I'm your worst enemy. He'd tell me that.
Right.
So I wasn't so damn sensitive. I just, that's Tom. I don't like it. I told Westerdahl, why don't you have Tom write his speeches and you write his ad-libs? Because it was the ad-libs that would always get the point.
Yeah.
And he loved it. He really believed when he left and Bob there,
mm-hmm.
and of course with me subsequently, that somebody was sitting in his chair.
Yeah.
That was his chair, what goddamn. But he had the capacity. He gets credit for things, of course he didn't start.
Mm-hmm.
But the point with him is he got behind it and he wouldn't let go. And it was that tenacity and his stature and how he would talk that we have the Beach Bill. Hell, his portrait was the Beach Bill.
I know.
And he had nothing to do with a damn Beach
yeah.
Bill.
That was it. He flew in on the helicopter and held up the stick.
he opposed the bottle mill.
Yeah.
Initially.
Yeah.
And but he is remembered because he was a lot of people heard from him. He didn't say things that would be offensive.
Mm-hmm.
They liked him. Thought he was a great mm-hmm. guy. And I said that, just with my own knowledge, that Tom will go down as one of our beach, really beach field guy.
Mm-hmm.
But we got along well enough. If I really were down that I needed something, which I never had that, I wouldn't hesitate to go to him, but
mm-hmm.
but I really had my own things to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
I figured he was Well, I just said I have my own things to deal with, and I didn't bother about it. We, the two of us went back to Washington, D.C. Jackson had, was going to have a national land use bill.
Yeah.
And so Tom, of course, he's the one that gets all the attention, and they sent him back on the land use bill. And the legislative, anyway, somehow I'm the one that speaks for the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing was that I got through that night and he gets the first snorts, and he, that's where he told me that I was his worst enemy. And the next morning, we're at the committee meeting. Tom said, now, Senate Bill 100, no, no, Tommy, well, Senate Bill, so, no, Tommy, he really didn't understand.
Right.
He knew what it was, but he didn't understand. And, but he wasn't that nervous. He gets up and does this Tom McCall thing.
Mm-hmm.
And left, and everything was fine with the world. He remembered by people that weren't even born.
Yeah.
And that's fine. You have to be practical about these things. I did what I did. I'm proud of what I did. I think it was good for Oregon. That's my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
People would say, well, what's, you know, what, there we go. Oh, it's that
I could move the table too.
No, it's that chair.
Okay.
And well, you know, what's history going to do? That's not mine.
Right.
That's not my job. I mean, my job. I can't force history to say what history's going to say. I just feel we did a good job. The people that worked with me were damn proud of what they did while they worked.
Mm-hmm.
It's oh, early on in my administration, somebody said, that's not the way we did it. I know. And I had them working harder, but they felt better.
Yeah.
They really did. They felt better.
Yeah.
And, you know, can you imagine the going to school, 35 years in the retail drug business, months where my brothers and I wouldn't take our own checks because we don't have enough money to pay our employees. You have to buy the same rugs thinking from the market, thinking that's what we could sell, that kind of thing. And 20 years in the legislature, hey, that's kind of a good,
yeah.
A good school.
Yeah. A very good school.
And it was the right guy at the right time, I think, my opinion. Because I'm not sure that any of my, those before me or after me could have handled the recession we had. That is clear now. They're still screwing around. You know, they're getting hysterical down there. You know, we didn't. It was not apparently hysterical. People weren't happy. I know that. They didn't have a job. But people don't understand. They're a Katina that doesn't have a job. But Jim is working, but he's worried he might lose his job. So he doesn't buy. So it isn't just that he doesn't have a job. And I know all that. But I know enough about it to know that I'm proud. I'm personally proud. In my three-ring binder, about a year after I was, after I'd left office, and I was in Salem, and I was talked to well, let's say this is confidential, but not the story. The person, Jill Thorne. Mike's.
Yeah, Mike's wife. And the mother of Katie Koba.
And she has an understanding. She has her head screwed on real quick. Mm-hmm. And she said to me, and I consider it one of the greatest compliments, "Vic, the job is tougher than you made it look."
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I thought that was, I wrote that down.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. Because, you know, you just got about doing it, and we didn't fuss around and say, like the football, I'm a football fan.
Mm-hmm.
Some football guy sacks the quarterback, and then he changed. God, that's his job.
Mm-hmm.
What are you strutting around about? And the runner goes through there. And then if you keep your eye, he's got blockers all over the place that are clearing the path for him.
Mm-hmm.
When she said that to me, that's pretty much what we did.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not a matter of making noises. It was a matter of doing it.
Yeah.
Getting it done.
Yeah.
And by and large, Lynn Newbery said to me, "Hey, you must have done a good job this year." Why? He said, "I haven't seen any headlines of people living in cars and sleeping on the street. And, you know, usually around that time of year." And that said something. We use senior centers as a distribution for food, and out comes a food share. But they were all over the country, so senior centers.
Mm-hmm.
Did everything we could. Anyway, I surely strayed, but I think it's well to talk, for me to talk to you about how I've thought about it. I was lucky. I feel real comfortable about what we did.
Mm-hmm.
I am very proud of the people that work with me.
Mm-hmm.
The department heads are just really good. I was very offended when my successor talked about Deadwood.
Yeah.
And I chat with you. That's all. Although probably not part of your script, but maybe it'll help somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's switch and go into probably the most attention-grabbing issue during your time as governor, the Rajneeshis.
What?
The Rajneeshis.
Yes.
You've talked a bit about, for instance, telling the press, "There are things I know that I can't tell you." And I know from talking to Denny, at one point he was so frustrated with some reporter who was just pushing at him. He said, "This is totally off the record. Turn everything off." And he took him behind a door and showed him the command center and had somebody from up on one of the mesas around there, up on the rim rock. "Yes, nothing's happening in there right now." Ooh. But talk to me about the Rajneeshis in terms of two things. First of all, your feelings about religious freedom and expression, which we've talked about before, but I want to kind of get it officially here. And then the practical management of dealing with the Rajneeshis, which gets into, you know, state troopers hither, thither, and yon, and that kind of thing.
They didn't get any good marks from me for diversification and everything. And it's only because that they did diversification is fine, and I believe in it and worked on it, and you know it, and you read about it. But these people were this greedy people who are self-centered, and all they cared about was them and themselves. Their face was Sheila, and she's arrogant and cocky, and I managed, part of my management was that I would never go on the ranch and I would never talk to them, and I didn't want to give them any credibility at all.
Did that come from you?
Yes.
Or was that, okay.
That was my mold.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob Oliver and Jerry Thompson were my, was me. We had them in court, as you know, on a land use mm-hmm. measure. They had brought these hobos in, and we wanted them to send them back home.
Mm-hmm.
They started to do some trading. Well, the governor would get over, and Jerry told them, "You don't understand. We don't trade. Never have, never will." Well, it took them a while to really believe that. I think when they finally believed that they were not going to get any trade, is when they began to think about it and the bug ones started to leave.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you that my personal view was that that happened quicker than most cults.
Mm-hmm.
They all go away, but you just don't know when they're going to go away. And my personal feeling was very strong about Sheila and what they were doing. They were flaunting it and it coming to town with a red dress and they bought property and spent a lot of money, bought all these cars. And they were strictly not Oregonians by like a long shot.
Mm-hmm.
But my job was to keep it cool. The smart political move was to publicly chew on them. Because
mm-hmm.
Oregonians were madder than hell. So that was a good political. But while they were doing that, I'm trying to keep it cool. You do the best you can. Yeah, we had good information. People would come to me and say, "You got to do something about these folks. They got guns." Well, I know they have guns. I said, but every pickup goes up and down the highway has got a gun back here. Now that we can have guns and they can't have guns.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, we at one time, and maybe you know all of this, when at Redmond we had personnel carriers and tanks and helicopters and troops, and we had them on training. But it got that serious, and of course you've seen the executive orders.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, it's historical because it wasn't signed.
Right, right.
And, but I mean, it's all that serious.
Mm-hmm.
And even after I left, my successor turned Sheila loose,
mm-hmm.
and she still owed us her own money.
Mm-hmm.
But and he didn't tell the attorney general, the district attorney.
Mm-hmm.
We just. But anyway, it was a tough time. I've said, gee whiz, I didn't need a recession and bug one all at the same time. And it's mainly because they were just sort of walking around.
Yeah.
Oregonians shouldn't be treated that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, it, again, the fact that I wouldn't acknowledge them, by that I mean go to their ranch and talk with you and the Bhagwat, that really, that was something that they did lament about, because that was one step they didn't reach. And in a way, you know they're not good people. You know that they're very good and are hurting Oregonians. But this is a democracy.
Mm-hmm.
When the Bhagwan went back to India and wanted to live in some city, they said, "No, well, we can't do that in America."
Yeah.
But they said no to him there. So it you know, you got to, people, after my first session, people said to me, "Are you a lawyer?" I said, "No, I'm not a lawyer." "Don't you have to be a lawyer?" "No. All you need are a set of principles and common sense." And as I look back my 20 years, that was really pretty much the way I acted.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just know, first a good set of principles, and I really believe this country, our system, and I lament about where we're going, because this country is supposed to be run by people, but there's so many damn many people either are not running it or running it down.
Mm-hmm.
And so I worry about that. Nonetheless, good people. The press that won that last day,
mm-hmm.
They were emotional, I'm sure. They were.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because how they get treated, you know, and they had all of this experience in the past and the future. Have I told you about I told the legislature, if you don't do something about property taxes, I'll call you back in special session. They didn't, and I did.
Mm-hmm.
So you usually try to work out with the legislature, the leaders, so it goes smoothly. And I met with Ed Fadley, Karen. Karen's, Eugene, Grant, Karen's,
mm-hmm.
Speaker and House, and then of course the Republicans. And I'd go in the conference room, and we'd go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Finally, I'd come out into the reception area, the media's all there. "Have you heard this story? I don't want to repeat it. Have you heard it?"
Is this the one where eventually they're not there when you have the announcement? Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
And I
yeah. "Denny, where are they?"
"No, tell my answer." They didn't say.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, and save time on that.
Yep.
It was, they going, "God, no, I want to talk to them." And there was a difference between a press conference and a media availability.
Right, and right. Exactly.
That was funny, though. That was funny. And Ed Fadley did school, and he kept, when he finally came to the agreement, he wanted to make sure that there was an amendment in there, and that would be the one that would screw it up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one that screwed it up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there you are.
Exactly. Exactly. We've been going for about an hour and 20 minutes. So why don't we stop there? That's a good chunk of stuff.
Yeah. Well, I want to make sure you get, you know, I stray. You
oh, yeah.
Jerk me back.
Yeah. What I do when I go home, because last time was the first time I had this, is first I make a copy for archives, and then I have a copy that I edit. And so I just go through and I take the snippets out. So the Mark Hatfield stuff will all be, here's the Mark Hatfield things, Bob Packwood things. Go all put it together like that and start taking notes. And
is that marvelous to have that thing? Well, I'm pleased. I really am. And I told you. I might want to make sure you do. I want to say again, you are the author. I appreciate that. And, you know, I'll answer questions as you want. I won't try to intrude. And if I do intrude, you just kick me out of the door. Because I really believe you are the author.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want you under any circumstance to feel that you need. You don't want to offend me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm just trying to say I appreciate it. And that's where you and I get together.
Absolutely.
One thing, if I ever do, I would tell you what my advisor and my campaign guy from Washington, state of Washington, and he told me, he said, now, if I tell you something and you don't do it, that's okay. You make the decision.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to do it because I said it. There you are. And that's the way it should be. I will tell you one thing, and I will leave it there. It struck me before we really got going.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what would be the title? And I turn it over. Over the years. And finally I came up with, which kind of fits how I feel about America. The title would be An Immigrant's Son.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that would be kind of a pickup.
Mm-hmm.
But again, remember what I said.
Right.
If it comes out, ooh, see, that's okay too.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
The point is freedom for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now,